It was one of the most exciting days I've had in a long time. It's All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. At 2 a.m. on the 10th of October, I got my email that said, you could now download the new Radiohead music, 10 songs. And as I walked around NPR the next day, you could tell who was listening by that spaced look in their eyes. With me to talk about what's coming out and what just came out is Meredith Oakes, a musician with the Damn Lovelies and a DJ for Sirius Satellite Radio's Trucker Channel.
Talk show host for the Trucker Channel.
All right.
Outlaw Country DJ.
And Robert Christgau is also in New York City. He's a contributing editor for Rolling Stone magazine. And Tom Moon is at his home in Philadelphia. This Radiohead record, which I'd love to hear more of, and we'll get to some more of it, I just thought on so many levels was a wonderful event. It's hard to turn a record release into an event anymore, isn't it?
Yes, but that doesn't mean they don't still try. And in the hip-hop community, they have their own ways of doing it, with a lot of street promotion.
Uh-huh. We had somebody at work here had a little sign on their desk and says, don't bother me, I'm listening to the new Radiohead record.
And that should be a T-shirt, I mean, to go with this whole big thing.
I don't know.
Absolutely.
I mean, I spent one Monday night at Virgin waiting for Kanye and 50 Cent to come out at the same time. There was quite a lot of excitement there.
Yeah, no, there was a lot of excitement about a lot of things. I particularly enjoyed this record and wondered how many of you bought the record. First of all, we're all people who get free records. Any of you get online and spend any money on it?
I did. Absolutely.
Tom Moon
did
in Philadelphia. I spent money as well. How much did you spend, Tom?
I spent the £40 because I wanted the extra tracks in that come in December, and I wanted to sort of see what the artwork would be like, and
it's
I wanted
like
$80
now.
And
I spent
$10.10 is what was my because of 10-10. I thought it would be a gesture, which I thought would be nice to have a receipt that said 10-10, but as it turned out, with taxes and everything, it came to like 1047. It was sort of a useless number, but it was fun to do it. I'm curious what happens when I hope that they release and tell people about how much people were willing to pay. And what I thought was beautiful about the whole premise was it gave you just a minute to think about what's this stuff worth to you as not you as a critic, Robert, or you as a critic, Meredith, or Tom, but as a listener, what's it worth to you to have and own this record? And I thought that was a good thing.
That's a great question. That's what makes this a historic event, is it not?
I think so.
I'm sorry. It also makes it a historic bit of promotion in which they are selling this record to the highest bidder and will certainly do better than your piddling £40, Tom, by the time they're on the other side of it. I mean, I personally don't find any kind of promotion or most kinds of promotion offensive. I'm not offended by the notion of promotion. But that's what's going on here. It's a selling strategy.
Let me ask you a question, Robert. If there was a bunch of people who got together and made music together because they love to make music and they said, you know what? We have money in the bank. We're fine. Let's just do something different here. Can't they do that without it being a gimmick or a promotion? Can't there be honest expression it doesn't have to be thought of as some commercial bit of promotion and gimmick? Can it be just like an honest thought of...
Bob, you're the person who's using the words gimmick and promotion pejoratively.
Well,
I do not.
I think, when you say promotion...
I think gimmicks and promotion are part of pop music. I like pop music, and I have no problem in principle with gimmicks or promotion.
But you think this is not a gimmick? You think this is a gimmick?
I think it's an elaborate gimmick. A subtle gimmick, even perhaps a profound gimmick. But yes, I think it's a gimmick.
Let's listen to Jigsaw Falling into Place, which is the whole bottom end of this record is just one gorgeous thing for me after another. In case you haven't guessed, I'm excited about a record. So I'll listen to it. We'll come back. We have a whole slew of great records to talk about for music that's coming out through the end of the year. We'll get to some of those after my exuberance and we listen to some more Radiohead.
Thank you. as you take my hand, just as you write my number down, just as the drinks arrive, just as they play your favorite songs, your belly disappears. No one to wind up like a spring before you had too much. Come back and focus again. The walls have been in shape. They got a Cheshire cat grin, all blurring into one. This place is on a mission.
Tamun, I did something a little bit mean to you. I called you up the day before the record was going to come out and said, hey, Tom, could you get the record early in the morning and write a review for All Things Considered? And I know that's hard for a Radiohead record, and you did a fine job. What do you think of the record? What do you think of the music?
I love it. I think it's great stuff. What I particularly like is the fact that over the last couple of years, these guys did drop a little bit of the veil and went after these songs, the songs that are listed on this record, as works in progress, and they really...
Meaning they played them on their many tours.
Right, they toured them before they really had much more than a structure, and in several cases, they did go through extensive revision. They changed in tone. Some of them, the tempos changed quite a bit. And what you came away with after seeing them live and maybe hearing on YouTube some of the live performances that fans caught was that these guys, as you know, they may be the best band in the world, they may not be, but they're really concerned with refining a certain kind of sonic thumbprint that they have, and they found different expressions of it, and they put them on this record. I mean, the version of Body Snatchers here is really much, much more developed and much more exciting than it was when I saw them before on any of the live iterations I heard. And I really felt like this was a thing where they could very easily jump the shark and kind of create the same record over and over again. And it felt a little, Hail to the Thief felt a little bit like that in spots. And this, it's a streamlined sound from a band that's figured out how to sort of deliver this stuff live first.
We'll go on and play some other music in a minute, but I just want to say one thing for anybody who hasn't heard this record yet, especially anyone who hasn't heard this record on their best stereo in the house or on their headphones. This is a record that will bring back the love of listening to a record if you haven't in a while. The sound on this record, even though it was an MP3 and it was only a 160 kilobit, was gorgeous. The placement of sounds coming from the side of your head, the back of your head, in front of you, it was absolutely stunning, the care that went into making this music.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And
all of it is that sort of dense, big Radiohead sound. I mean, a couple of the ballads are just very spare and tender and, a perfect vehicle for, sad boy Tom York.
Yeah.
Tom, is what we just heard, in your opinion, does that exemplify the big Radiohead sound? Sounded pretty spare to me.
No, Jigsaw Falling into Place is as it was wrought live, pretty much. I mean, they're not, there's not 30 Johnny Greenwood guitar tracks on that one.
We can play just a 30 seconds of, I think, what might be the next cut, which is, House of Cards could do it. You want to do Body Snatchers? You mentioned Body Snatchers.
Love that, but right. It's a hard needle drop in the middle Body Snatchers.
For Body Snatchers, okay. Let's skip to the middle of Body Snatchers, play a tiny bit, come back, and Robert Christgau, you turned me on to something that I quite like, which was this Chinese punk record, so we'll do that right after.
Okay.
I could sit here and make it the sixth time I've listened to this record in the last 2 days, but let's move on.
And I would like to say for the record that although I'm the bad guy who actually said the mean things about Radiohead, my friend Meredith over here was making various uncomplimentary gestures.
Was not.
You were too.
That was not gesturing.
You just had to yawn right at that moment.
I was making the rock sign. The devil horns.
All right. Well, make some devil horns for this, Robert Christgau. What the heck is this crazy collection of Chinese punk music that I got and you got
it's
in your box?
It's called Look Directly Into the Sun. Martin Atkins, you know, he was in Public Image Limited.
Yeah.
While Public Image Limited was something to be in. He left in 85, and then he started a much longer-lived and less significant band, which still exists, called Pigface. Worked with various noise bands, Ministry, Revolting Cox. And he has his own label, and in 2006 he went to China, and he recorded a bunch of bands, some of whom he signed to his label. Now, I have no idea what a whole album of stuff by any of these bands would sound like, and nor am I even sure, I've played this about four times now, you know, whether I'm so entranced by the story that I'm hearing the music, that the music is exciting as the story is. I can't swear that. What I can say is that I did listen to it four times, and that I could listen to it four times, because it was sufficiently interesting. And why don't we play, you want to play the first track first?
Yeah, I love the first one, sure. This is the Shanghai cut.
No, this is Snapline.
Oh, okay.
Close Your Cold Eyes.
Okay, good. You know, I hadn't thought about it at all until you reminded me of Martin Atkins' drumming role in Public Image. There's actually a little of that that
reminded
me of Public Image.
The way it's echoed.
You said that the story fascinated you. Explain what you mean by the story.
Well, that means here you have 18 bands from China, most of whom sing in English, and all of whom, with the exception of my least favorite thing on it, called Song 5 by White, which is some sort of minimalist guitar thing, playing in recognizable rock and roll styles. And what you get here is that sense of I can do it too that makes certain kinds of teenage punk bands really exciting. And you'd have to figure, you know, how many people are, I meant to look it up in Wikipedia before I came, what are we up to there? 2 billion 4? 2 billion 2? What's 200 million people in China?
Oh, I see.
You know, you've got 2 billion plus
they
people,
get
you're going to get 18 bands. why not? It reminded me a little bit of those NME compilations in the 80s. My favorite was C81, which I think was the first one, which included things like Skritti Politti's The Sweetest Girl and the Blue Orchid's Low Profile and Ian Dury's Close to Home, and then things I've never heard of. I heard it then, but I don't remember it now. Gist's Greener Grass, what was that?
I don't know.
Where you had a sense that the whole country was burgeoning with people who were excited about making music, and you definitely get that from this record. A lot of the best things on it, as far as I'm concerned, have the additional "I can do it too" quality of being sung and perhaps played. I don't know because there's no liner notes by women. Why don't we play my favorite thing on the record, which is by a band called Hang on the Box, whatever that means, but it's an English name. Maybe it's translated.
That was the
song is Shanghai.
Okay.
And I noticed that they make a lovely sound at about 118, so I would like to get there. Yellow,
Well, that's fun, Robert.
Sound was by the 3.5-year-old daughter of good friends of mine in L.A. who was saying it constantly for 2 days.
That's underused. My
wife then sent it to a 9-month-old that she met. and the 9-month-old immediately tried to make that sound.
It's passing around the whole world. I love it.
And the
Tom, I'm curious to know what you think of this.
Oh, I liked it a lot. I was more taken, though, Robert, with what you said about the story, being intrigued by the story, especially in the context of the two things we've heard, this stuff and Radiohead, which, you know, I think a lot of people who write about music for a living, and I put myself in this, do sometimes get carried away by the story.
I really try to resist it, and that's why I mentioned it.
Yeah.
I think you should try and write about the music.
That's
not
right.
The story.
And you know, this, if this were separated from the story, it probably wouldn't hit us. We probably wouldn't get to it, or maybe not be as responsive to it.
And, yeah, well, I think there's. But, you know, I'm not. Well, that's what it really remains to be found out. And the only way that, in my experience, that I as a critic can figure that out is to play this record a lot, go about my business, probably get distracted, come back to it, and then come back to it again and just sort of see whether I continue to want to listen
to it.
That's
right. Is it still ringing the bell after many times?
And it does, but at that point, sometimes knowing the background does make a difference.
Yeah.
And I think that's okay.
Right. Well, and in the case of Radiohead, I would argue that people will be going back to Radiohead after having sort of worn out the digital download and the whole, like, pay what you want facet of the story. There's enough meat on the bone on the record where people will go back to it and they will find things that they missed in the course of, you know, sort of rhapsodizing over the novelty aspects of the release.
Yes, I agree.
You know, I'm going to take us to Meredith Oakes, who has a pick that there was a moment in punk music and around the time of Public Image after the Sex Pistols broke up, where Neil Young came in and made music that satisfied both the hippies and the punks at the same time. I don't know how the heck he did it, but he really did. He's got a new record called Chrome Dreams 2, and one song on it is quite massive, huh, Meredith?
Yeah, that's the single. It's 18 minutes.
The single is Ordinary People? Really?
13 seconds. That's the single.
What does that mean?
That just means you're Neil Young. You can do whatever you want.
No, what does it mean by to be a single? Is that what you mean?
No, it's a big middle finger to radio, really, the way it stands. It's like, yeah, it's obviously not going to get played. So here, it's the single, 18 minutes. But it's not a new song. It's an old song from the 80s. And the whole album is supposed to be a sequel to Chrome Dreams, you know, one, I guess, just Chrome Dreams, which
well,
never was released.
Speaking of gimmicks, speaking of promotion, what a lot of hoo-ha that is. It has
ding,
nothing
ding,
to do
ding.
With Chrome Dreams one.
Well, first of all, how many people, even Neil Young fans, know about Chrome Dreams? I mean, tell us what it is, and then why two, which is not hardly related to one, and fill us in here.
Fans, you know, have fans talk about Chrome Dreams. It's this legendary album that never was released from 1977. The title comes from his old producer, David Briggs, who produced Zuma and Tonight's Tonight and some others. I guess he drew a grill of an old car, and when you turned it on its side, it looked like a woman, you know, maybe like a mudflap girl. I don't know. But anyway, that's where the title comes from. Never was released. Instead, they put out American Stars and Bars instead.
It supposedly contained some really famous songs, right? Like Powderfinger.
Yeah. But the true Neil Young fans, you know, who have bootlegs and all that stuff, rave about this stuff. And the first three songs on this record,
Chrome Dreams 2,
right, which are from the late 80s, which are like from the Blue Notes.
The This Notes for You sessions.
Here.
Right. One was Boxcar was supposed to be on another unreleased, quote unquote, legendary Neil Young album, the Times Square album.
Right.
Which is like one of my favorite songs on this record, Boxcar. But the single, Ordinary People, is what I'd like to play, the 18-minute single.
Okay, well, I'm going to go get a beer, and we'll...
They're just such a rolling joint, Bob. You do more than a beer in 18 minutes. But back in the 70s, you know, a DJ would play maybe not an 18-minute song, but a really long song like Stairway to Heaven, because they could go down the hall and do whatever they were going to do.
Exactly.
And it was a much freer time for radio. It was a wonderful time for radio. Now it's not. And, you know, that I guess is part about putting this album together, it's not like a, you know, subject matter and format-wise, it's all kind of all over the place, which is nice. You know, you hear him doing a bunch of different stuff. Ordinary People is, you know, it's like Tales of the Reagan Era, right? It's kind of like the Ballad of Trickle-Down Economics. He wrote it in the 80s. It's about bartenders and waitresses and boxers. It's about working folks who were, like, eclipsed by the financial boom of the time. And, of course, there's, you know, that doesn't happen these days, right? but really, every time I hear, you know, a new report about how the Dow and NASDAQ are up to record highs, I'm going to listen to this song.
Okay.
Let's, it's the same.
Let's listen. We'll go and take that infamous break then. We bring back old radio. I'll come back in 18 minutes. No, we'll just play a little sample of it. Hello, everybody. We're here in the radio station.
Oh, did you guys smoke a doobie, Bob?
You know, Neil Young can go on making records for the rest of his life and my life, and I will be overjoyed. And even though nothing much new happens, it's okay by me. And I'll, you know, go back when I really want to listen to Neil Young record. I'm going to turn on Zuma, and I'm going to turn Everybody Knows This Is Nowhere or After the Gold Rush, but I sure am happy still to listen to a new Neil Young record.
I have later records than that I want. Prairie Wind, I'd play Prairie Wind.
Yeah.
I mean, I still think it's, I think that's a wonderful record, and Russ Never Sleeps is the one I play.
Zuma.
That's the one I play.
Zuma's my favorite, too.
Yeah.
But I like this. I've listened to it like maybe three times, and I think I will return to it again.
Tom Moon, here's a pairing that kind of surprised me. It was Jolie Holland and Booker T. Jones.
Yeah.
Doing What
How
a
does it
wonder-
surprise you?
Why did it surprise me?
What's surprising about
I
that?
I wouldn't even know that they'd know each other, frankly. I don't know why. I mean, I guess we imagine different...
Think about that label, you know, is all like country and soul music together.
I guess I didn't think of it in terms of label. I just thought of it in terms of two people and two different generations. Tom Moon, talk about who Jolie Holland is and remind people who Booker T is.
Well, Jolie, formerly of the Be Good Tanyas, had a couple of really interesting, spooky kind of Americana torch song records that showcase what I think is one of the great singing voices, just, you know, marvelously evocative. She has this one-off sort of two-sided single with the great Booker T. Jones of Booker T. and the MGs, the organist and pianist, who I think in the little accompanying material that they sent around talks a little bit about the 1967 Louis Armstrong recording of What a Wonderful World and how at that moment when it came out during, you know, the civil rights movement and stuff, it was sort of a, hey, but remember things are kind of great here, that there's love in the world, there's greatness in the world. And he talks a little bit about how it's nice to sort of bring that back. And it certainly is timely.
Tom, do you have any idea how these two managed to pull themselves into the same room?
You know, I don't. And oddly, this
anybody?
Document doesn't tell us.
I can't tell you that, but I can remind you, which something I'm sure you will all now remember, which is that the secret weapon of Willie Nelson's Stardust is Booker T. Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah, good point.
That's 30 years ago.
Let's give a listen to this. It was also, I like the What a Wonderful World. There was also a nice little thing that featured Jolie Holland's, and I love her voice, was a second song. I only have two songs from the record. But let's give a listen to the What a Wonderful World.
Of gray, wild roses too. I see them bloom for me and for you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue. Bright, blessed day in the dark, secret night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Bartender, can I get another drink?
Are they going for Nora Jonesy? I mean, is it, you know,
I don't know. I mean,
it's not fair to say that to her, maybe.
Yes, it is. I think it's quite fair. I mean, I actually think it sounds pretty nice, but ultimately.
And what's wrong with Nora Jones?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Okay. Oh, nothing. Not a thing.
No, she's
come
not
on,
a thing.
Well, okay. Well, no, I think she's got a fantastic voice. I love
Jolie
her
Holland
music. Well, I like
Jones.
Both of them.
I do too.
You know, sometimes I see it happen. I'm not saying it happened to you, Robert, but somebody gets popular and you're done with them. Not
I know,
you, Robert.
And I didn't mean
but
to.
Me?
To
but I never do that. I'm
good.
Sorry. That
but did you never like Nora singing?
Disease.
Did you not?
Me?
Never?
I like the single, the first. I like. No, I mean, I think. What can I tell you?
Yeah.
After she won the Grammy, I wrote a piece, defending her to all the people who by then were putting her down because she just won a Grammy, and pointed out what a remarkable achievement it was, but also, I think, delineated its limitations, which I think are real.
Well, she does have a beautiful voice, but to hear Jolie Holland go from, like, the spooky, dark, ghost, you know, totally haunted stuff to that just feels like I want to go back to the haunted stuff. But, you know.
Well, listen to the B-side. Listen to this blues.
Okay, let's play a few minutes of
this blues. Yeah, you should hear that.
Yeah, because a minute there, I thought I was at a bar mitzvah. Good bar mitzvah, but I thought I might have been at a bar mitzvah. So let's give a listen to this. Okay.
I mean, what was the point of the collaboration, you know?
I think he went out to take a break.
Smoke a doobie, listening to 18-minute Neil Young song. No, I love her, but I would like to have gotten more out of that collaboration.
Well, I look forward to hearing the rest of it because she does some great stuff. There's another collaboration that when I looked at it, I went, "What the heck?" And that was the Robert Plant Alison Krauss collaboration. And you know, maybe it shouldn't have surprised me. It did surprise me.
Just conceptually, I like the record.
I get surprised easily, I guess. I think it didn't click for me at all. Robert Plant, we all know from Led Zeppelin, Alison Krauss, a great American singer, and you know of great country music. I don't know. I mean, I've been thinking Robert.
These are both people with a demonstrated commitment to the general field of what is called roots music. In my opinion, Plant, over the past 10 or 12 years, far more admirably and adventurously than Alison Krauss. Alison Krauss is a very, very gifted woman, mm-hmm. and she has a remarkable voice. But Plant's career has really been an interesting career. He has this celebrity so large that he fills any room he walks into. I saw him at the Arthur Lee benefit at the Beacon Theater in New York a year and a half ago, and it was amazing. But what was really interesting is that of all the performers at that benefit, including Ryan Adams and others, this guy knew this music backwards and forwards. Mm-hmm. He had taken that house band that Ryan Adams thought he was too good for and rehearsed with them for days. He knew this music cold and did it. But then at the same time, he's on the Festival in the Desert compilation. And he's
doing great.
He's performing with North African. And then on this new Fats Domino compilation, tribute record, he has two tracks, one of which is with the Soweto Gospel Choir. Huh. And when he does this Alison Krauss record, does she do some blues? No. He does, for the most part, it's strange country rock, not country music, country rock of various sorts, Everly Brothers. T-Bone Burnett, who's the producer and who deserves a lot of credit, I think, for the eeriness of the record sound. Mm-hmm. He gets a Sam Phillips song on there. Yeah. There's Raleigh Sally's Killin' the Blues, which I knew from both John Prine and Chris Smithers' cover versions. An old R&B song, this is called The Rich Woman by Lil Millet that I'd never heard of. I had to go look it up. Never heard of before. Two Gene Clark songs that aren't so good. You know,
of the birds,
that kind of stuff.
Let's give a listen to a cut. Do you want to listen to Rich Woman?
Is it? Yeah.
Okay. Which is on
that's
CD
the lead
called
track.
Raising Sand is the opening cut, right? And sure, we'll come back talk a bit more about Robert Plant and Alison Krauss's collaboration, and then we'll think about where else to head. Sonically, just a great record and a real surprise for me. I dig this record a lot.
Yeah, you know, that track is a real relatively bluesy track for the record. And the other one I had picked out before, which is Please Read the Letter, is actually a Paige Plant song from their collaboration. Was it an EP or an album? I think they just managed to get together for an EP, as I recall. So, which is also kind of bluesy.
That's my favorite on the record.
Yeah, I like it a lot too. But I thought maybe we'd play something that was more country, like maybe the Everly Brothers' "Gone, Gone, Gone." That's track five.
Okay, let's play a few seconds of that, and you can go. All songs considered, we played the "Please Read the Letter" in its entirety. You can go back to a
it's
show.
Terrific.
And
it's terrific. It's
terrific. It is a great great collaboration.
Seems okay, babe. You wake up and find that you're alone. 'Cause I'll be gone.
Yeah, it's real good.
You know, you don't think it's going to work, but it does.
I was thinking when I first heard them of Robert Plant and Sandy Denny, who did that great
the
Battle of Evermore on the fourth Led Zeppelin record. Just a beautiful, beautiful intertwining of voices.
I mean, he really turned out very well, Robert Plant.
Yeah, I mean,
really
you think
did.
Of Roger Daltrey, you think of Robert Plant, where they would have headed, and boy, you got to give it to Robert Plant.
Yeah.
Meredith, I put on this Levon Helm record and thinking that it was just going to be, you know, another band, the band, solo record, which I was going to be disappointed with. It was just going to drive me back to hear "When I Paint My Masterpiece" or some great, great song. But it was good. I like this Levon.
Yeah. I love this record. This may be one of my favorite records of the year.
Yeah, I haven't played it that much yet either, but I'm really skeptical about all this stuff, and I played it, and I thought it sounded good, too.
Well, you know what it is? He takes these traditional songs.
And tell folks who Levon Helm is.
The drummer of the band and the token American, I guess.
Right, and also the actor.
The token Southerner, right.
Best actor in the band.
and so there are some contemporary songs on here. Steve Earle cover, you know, his project with Del McCoury, "The Mountain." There's a nice cover of that. Buddy and Julie Miller are on it. Levon Helm does one of their songs, you know, the Nashville couple, the like roots music Nashville couple. A couple Paul Kennerly tunes are on here. He was married to Emmylou Harris. Anyway, so some contemporary stuff, but a lot of traditionals, a lot of stuff from his past given to him by his parents and songs that mean something to him. But he really blows the dust right off them with his drumming. And, and some of the arrangements are really amazing. And, you know, his voice sounds great. He had throat cancer, and he's had a really crappy decade. I mean, his barn studio burned down, and Rick Danko died. And this record feels, you know, in the light of all that stuff. Again, the story affecting how you see. But aside from that, it stands on its own.
And he's
really
doing
great
these
record.
Great sessions up at his home in Woodstock in the barns, these things called the
Rambles.
Yeah,
the Midnight
Ramble,
But the fact of the matter is that overcoming all of that and getting to make music can put up an edge and an excitement into his performance that wasn't there before.
And
like
it
what
does.
Happened with Paul McCartney after his wife died. I mean, he made that wonderful covers record. It was right out of that emotion.
Yeah.
Well, these traditional songs sound just great, sound really fresh. And I picked out the Carter Family song that I especially like what they did with it, with the arrangement and the rhythm. "Single Girl, Married Girl," A.P. Carter, one of my favorite Carter Family songs.
Good, let's listen.
1, 2, 3.
If it's okay, I'd like to just play a little bit of one of the more upbeat cuts on this, and I think it might have been the opening cut that also just did it and hearing his voice.
Yeah, because, you know, that song that we just heard sounds the most like the band of everything else on the record.
Yeah.
And also, I should mention that his daughter Amy Helm of Olabel is singing harmonies with him on that.
I don't even know the name of the first cut. I don't have it in front of me.
Oh, it's "False Hearted Lover Blues."
Okay.
Thank you.
We'll try to get these cuts up online for you to listen to and hear more of. But these are records worth listening to. We're with Meredith Oakes and Robert Christgau in New York City and Tom Moon in Philadelphia. We're talking about music that's coming out from now till the end of this year. And it's been a pretty darn good year so far. I just that voice reminded me of what I just did recently, hadn't done in ages, which is I pulled out music from Big Pink and listened to it from the beginning to the end a couple of weeks ago. And the music for Big Pink is the great record by the band. And if anybody out there doesn't know what that record is, it isn't a matter of whether you should like listen to a song or two. Just go buy the record, right?
I mean, yeah, don't download one track.
No, it really is one of the great American records ever.
Same with the one.
Okay with that?
The one called The Band, maybe even more.
The Band is better.
You think so?
I think so.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we can fight over, but either one is fine. And
that stuff holds up.
Yeah, it really does. I'm surprised.
Sounds better every time I hear it.
Hey, you know, since we started with the world's greatest rock band, before we've done Rat of Time, can we play the actual world's greatest rock band?
Them fighting.
Usinador.
Radiohead.
Usinador.
Usinador. Well, we could.
Do we have time?
We'll have time. Tom Moon, Maria Rita. Now, I looked at the CD cover, and I think I put it aside and thought, man, I'm not sure that I'm going to get to this record so much because it really was not much of a record cover. I don't know if you do that, too. When the stacks get bigger than you know you can deal with in a short amount of time, I pull out the ones that look more interesting than others. She wasn't one. Who's Maria Rita?
Actually, it's Maria Rita.
Oh, I'm sorry.
She is the daughter of Elise Regina, the great Brazilian singer who of the 60s and early 70s. And she's sort of become a pop star in Brazil, a little bit along the lines of João Gilberto's daughter, Bebel Gilberto. So her records up till this point have been very sort of pop, a little bit electronica, and not necessarily all that consequential. They're pleasant. She's got her mother's voice, and she understands how to phrase, but she hasn't really come with a record that would make you go, okay, this is someone who's a mature artist now. This one is mostly all acoustic, and it's all samba, and she's covering songs that have been around for a long time, and that I think she heard for years and years, and she's just it's the most natural flowing thing, and it makes you wonder why she was ever doing the pop thing.
How do you spell her last name?
Well, she just goes by Rita, R-I-T, Maria Rita, but it's pronounced Hita.
Okay, that's where I got fooled. Okay,
yeah.
So, well, let's play a cut, Tom Moon. Let's play a cut from that CD and see what it sounds like. Like this?
Yeah, the whole record's like that. It's just breezy. It makes you wonder how many of these great Brazilian voices have gotten psyched out by all the sort of loop-based production tricks.
We'll go. There's been a slew of good new soul records out these days, and Sharon Jones has done a new record with the Dap Kings called 100 Days and 100 Nights, 100 Days, 100 Nights.
Yeah, exactly, 100 Days, 100 Nights.
Tell me about that record, Meredith Oakes.
They're a, you know, funk soul band. They're part of this kind of revivalist soul movement to recreate soul as it was in the, you know, late 60s, early 70s.
By like people that. Who aren't living then, for the most part, yeah.
Yeah.
No, Sharon Jones,
right?
Sharon
Jones
is over 50.
Is she 50 years old?
That's right. Which she is 50.
Okay, so she was living then. And the other members of the band may have been very small. So they were probably living then, too.
Yeah, I doubt they're much more than 30, 35.
Well, I've loved them since they were the soul providers. And Sharon Jones sang that song, Switchblade. There was a line in there, I'm going to slit you where the good Lord split you. And she says it's so just so cool, like all the girls in my high school who would have killed you if they could have.
That's a good line.
The very scariest people in high school.
That's a good line.
It's a great line. And this is a great, this is, I think, my favorite thing that they've ever done. And Tom, are the Dap Kings Amy Winehouse's backup group, too?
Sometimes.
Yeah, not all the time, though.
Because this record, like that record, no samples, all the stuff recreated live using analog gear and all the, you know, equipment that was around at the time of like Stax Vault and all this other great soul stuff. And I want to play the second track, Nobody's Baby, because if you listen really carefully, you can pick out all these little elements that kind of could be samples, like the bass line from You Got Me Hummin', Sam and Dave, or an approximation of it. The guitar riff from Linda Lindell's What a Man. You know, little bits you can just kind of pull out. It's like this neat little history of soul music in here.
I just want to point out that I think we've been doing the show for about 8 years, and this could be our first song with the word baby in the title.
Really? You guys are too highbrow, man.
I know.
You guys
certainly hope
you're
not.
You're too highbrow, Bob.
I'm going to do an entire segment consisting of nothing but songs with baby in the title.
I'm up for it. I want in on that, actually. All right. You know what? I'll be there, too. Let's
okay,
give a
baby.
Listen to Sharon Jones. Baby, yes. Well, they got the drums going on with the guitar on the left side and the horns going on the right side, just like the old soul records did when you could afford to buy the stereo versions.
You know, I actually reviewed this record for Rolling Stone and listened to it a great many times.
Uh-huh.
I would like to dissent here just slightly.
Okay.
Me, dissent?
This would be the first time.
Never dissent. Never done that before. Sharon Jones, it seems to me, has a really credible, good voice. Not an exceptional voice. Not a voice I need to hear as a voice, but certainly, given the right material, an excellent voice. But the material, for the most part, there are many, many good songs with the word baby in the title. And what's great about the record, which you didn't hear much on that particular minute, is the horn arrangements, which are phenomenal. I think as good, the best horn arrangements I've ever heard on a soul record. They are of the quality of the very best Pee Wee Ellis.
That's right.
Dave Matthews, late James Brown, which is post 1970, say circa 74, when he really began to get complicated and jazzy. Only, in my way of thinking, Tom, you know, if I had to take one or the other, I'd take the Dap Kings. I think the horn arrangements are fabulous.
Yeah.
But I don't listen to a record for horn arrangements.
Right. Well, and I like the rhythm section arrangements, too. I could listen to this band do what it does all day long. And I think, Sharon Jones is, capable, but there is that question of getting it to the next level.
And there's nobody. I like the title song on this record, and I'm told by one of my students at Princeton, when I made this very same point, he named one song from the first album that he thought was an absolutely great song, but he had trouble coming up with number two. And writing songs is just—it's another skill.
Sure.
And Stax Holt had lots of people who could really write songs. They knew how to pick the right ones.
And how about Amy Winehouse? I mean, you know, we were talking like that record again, sort of the same template, and you know, the four or five songs that are just killer on that record just jump out at you.
That's right.
And you really, you know,
and they're not all that great. But I like, I mean, I think there's more good songs on that record than there are on this one.
Yeah, I'll grant you that. But I like this band better. You know, it's like if we could take our dream elements, we might really have a great record in there.
You have to get her out of rehab first.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Sorry.
First baby, then rehab? That's Britney's life.
So... We started this show with what some might say is the best band in the world. Certainly, for me, one of the best records of the year. But and throughout this show, Robert, you've had a chance to dissent. But I think this is your chance to assent for us. And
yeah,
tell
this
us.
This is my idea of the best band in the world. Although it's actually only half of that band. I think the best band in the world is Usina Dura and Super Etoile. They are coming to do an American tour in November. And it's very simple. If you're within 150 miles, don't miss them.
Huh. So this
there is no better live band in the world. Tom Moon, help me out here.
Yeah, I got to give it up, too. They are one of the best live bands I've ever seen. Huh. And when they do what they – when they perform live, they take stuff that's seemingly inconsequential on the American release records and make it sparkle.
I don't think any of the recent American release records are inconsequential. I think every record that Nadur has done for Nonesuch, this is now the fourth. It's called Rocco. Rocco Mi Rocco. You know, Wolof. I mean, they are transliterations as well as translations where they give you the phonetics.
Yeah.
And you're listening to him sing them and you're reading it. You say, what? That's the
same
thing.
Match, yeah.
So, Wolof, I'm not going to try and pronounce Wolof for you. I'm just going to do the best I can.
And for those who don't know Youssou N'Dour, and when you say his
name.
He's from Senegal. You spell his name Youssou.
And then N. apostrophe D O U R.
So now you can find the record.
When he makes records in Senegal, if there's one in 2002 called Ba Te, it's all up tempo dance stuff. When he does his Nonesuch records, they're more conceptual. His last record was called Egypt.
Yeah.
It was a record about Sufi. It was covertly anti Iraq war record.
Yeah.
In which instead of being fusioning towards Europe and America, he fusioned towards Egypt and praised the great leaders of his own religion, which is a brand of Sufism called Maridism.
And beautiful singing on that record.
Oh, gosh. And he uses Cairo strings arrangements. It's wonderful. The one before that, however, was sort of went in a European direction. There was some French chanson on it, which he also did gorgeously. He's 48 now, and he has a voice of a clarity and sweetness and expressiveness that would knock you out in somebody half his age. And for this record, he always conceptualizes. He went north to Mali and took half his band up to Mali, which is very closely aligned musically, but not the same thing as Senegal. And there's a lot of these tracks, I don't think the one I chose has it, there's a Ngoni, which is this four-stringed violin that sounds like a banjo. But let's play. I think this is the most immediately accessible track. It's the first track on the record. It's called 4444, which is a reference to an anniversary of Senegalese independence. And those nonsense syllables he's singing are actually the Wolof word for four, which he's singing many times.
I would stop before. I don't know if I caught a mistake or I just don't know. The Dusungoni or the Ngoni. You said violin. I think of it. Is that right? It sounds like a banjo. Is that?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I think so.
Okay. I was thinking more of a harp.
Yeah. I know it's four stringed, and I believe it's a. Tom, help me out here.
That's right. It can be plucked, but it's often actually played with like a
right.
Not a bow like a violin bow, but it's a plate with an implement.
Fine. Okay. Right. We'll keep going. Well, Well, thank you, everybody. I can't wait to hear a whole lot of this. You're going to listen to a couple of cuts, and you're all going to get a treat to this, to hear this. Robert Christgau, thank you for bringing it to the table. We'll go out on it. Meredith Oakes, thank you for the Neil Young, the Levon Helm, the Sharon Jones, and the Dap Kings. And Tom Moon in Philadelphia. I had never heard Maria Hita before. Couldn't even say her name. Jolie Holland was a delight. And the Radiohead, I've said enough about. I'm going back to listen to Time Number 6 as soon as the show is over. And I'm going to put it on my best stereo. Thank you all. It was fun talking to you all again.
Thanks,
Bob.
Be well.
Thank you.
For NPR Music, I'm Bob Boylan. It's All Songs Considered.
Cut, mom sub up the morning. Cut, kiss him up the morning. Wally cable suit, one gagger, me to Gucci one ring, when you are tangled. No luni wangena be ki independence be agni ko.